Hello. Welcome, everybody, to the No Normal Show for Thursday, October 15, 2020, brought to you by Revive Health. This is our weekly deep dive into how hospital and health system marketers can navigate what we are calling the No Normal. I am Chris Bevelo, Health Systems Practice Lead at Revive Health and your host for the show. I am joined, as always, by Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager at Revive Health and our show's producer. Hello, Chase.
Hey, Chris. Good to see you, as always.
Good to see you too. Also good to see Matthew Pinzer, who is our guest today. Matt is the Chief Marketing Officer at Jackson Health System, helping direct the system's patient acquisition and loyalty strategy and overseeing the staff that manages Jackson's public face through media relations, marketing, advertising, community outreach, branding, and digital media. Matt also serves as a senior advisor to Jackson's Chief Executive Officer, helping direct Jackson's strategy and tactics, including the massive financial turnaround that reversed more than $425 million in losses over 5 years into 8 consecutive years of multi-million dollar surpluses beginning in 2012. Matt, hello.
Hey, how you doing, Chris? Thanks for having me today.
Very good. Thank you for joining us. We're looking forward to diving in here in just a few minutes. First, let me get through a couple of housekeeping notes. If you're new to this podcast, this is a place where we share industry trends, research, stories from folks like Matt or from folks from outside of the industry, any kind of ideas or content to help health system marketers navigate that no normal successfully. If you want to dig into what we mean by the no normal, probably intuitive, but if you want to know more about how we think about it, key principles of it, check out a blog post we wrote that lays all of that out. Chase will put that in the chat function for you, a link to that. Speaking of Zoom and chat function, you can use that throughout the show to talk to other attendees of the show today. If you're live with us, Chase will also be using it, as I mentioned, to put references to anything we may be talking about there. But if you have a question for Matt or myself or Chase, please put it in the Q&A queue in Zoom. That's where we keep an eye out for questions. We will take questions as we go if they're relevant to what we're talking about, or we always have plenty of time at the end. So make sure that you have questions for us, put them in that Q&A queue for us. Also, remember, if you're new or you haven't done this before, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Each time we have the show, we post a video recording of the episode by the end of the day. So if you would like that to share with others or to visit yourself, you can find that at our website at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. We also have all kinds of other content related to COVID-19 and all the things we've been dealing with for the last, I guess we're up to 7 months now. It feels like it's been 7 years, but I think it's just been 7 months of this. Oh, boy. Okay. So, Matt, are you ready to dive in?
I'm always ready.
Okay. So what we wanted to talk about with you, because this is kind of a passion point for you, is the concept of transparency. And we're going to really kind of address that just in general in terms of what you and your organization are doing in regards to transparency, your philosophies around it, but also how COVID-19 has impacted that and see what you're doing there. So why don't you start by just sharing with us, maybe the general philosophy of Jackson Health in terms of transparency, whatever transparency may mean to you, whether that's pricing transparency or otherwise.
Yeah, thanks for teeing it up that way, because it really is something that I've given a lot of thought to and that our leadership team feels pretty strongly about. And I think it's kind of, our philosophy comes from, I think, three different legs of a stool. My background is I was a newspaper reporter for my first career. I spent 10 years as a reporter, mostly at the Miami Herald. So I just am kind of built to believe in sharing information, that sunlight is the best disinfectant, right? Our CEO, who actually spent 41 years as a banker before he went into healthcare, but has been very involved in our community for decades now, is also a big believer that when there's a lot of clarity about what public institutions are doing, that's how you get the most buy-in and the most alliance around it. And then if you set those two against the backdrop of the fact that we are a public hospital system in a state where that probably has the most liberal laws in the country on open meetings and public records. So literally, practically every meeting of our board of trustees is open to the public and to the press. Almost every document that we have that doesn't have PHI on it, you know, personal health information, is subject to a request from any member of the public. So there are a handful of carve-outs on that, but basically transparency is just part of our DNA.
So talk a little bit about specifically some of the things that you've done to try to address transparency and bring it to the forefront there.
Yeah, so I think we really are wrestling with it in two different ways. And I don't think we're alone on that by any stretch of the imagination, right? All the health systems are doing the same thing. So there's the quality side and there's the pricing side. Let me tackle the quality side first, because it's a little bit more of a hobby horse of mine. I think something any of us that have been in the industry for a while have seen evolve pretty quickly over the course of just, I don't know, maybe a dozen years, is going from that really being a black box to there being so much information out there. And I think it is worth us as an industry taking a step back and asking whether these systems that we've built are serving the purposes that we want them to. And the example that I use to illustrate this is it would not be hard for anyone to find a hospital in their community, in their state, that has a C grade from LeapFrog, a 5 stars from CMS, but is not ranked from US News and is considered low performing in some other measure, right? And all of these different sources are well-intentioned. And what's super crazy about it is all of these sources are pulling almost entirely the same data. They're pulling different publicly published data from CMS and from other sources. But what they're doing is they're using their own proprietary formulas to kind of weight what's important and how much to factor each of those different elements. So what was designed to help people kind of cut through how opaque healthcare can be to consumers, I think has really surfaced as being something that is even more confusing. So we're trying to move the needle in the right direction on that. And the way that we've decided to do it, for those who are watching on video, I'm doing a little screen share here of our website at jacksonqualitydata.org, is rather than relying on other sources, and definitely not cherry picking just the things that are good for us, we have very intentionally built a site where almost any publicly reported data that's going through a system where it's independently validated by a third party, we're go ahead and we're posting it all. And not only are we doing that, but we're comparing ourselves to state and national data when it's available. And that's everything from readmissions to mother baby stuff to stroke stuff. I mean, there's just tons of content out there, and we're trying to be really clear about where we're getting that data, what that data means in kind of layperson's terms, and very, very frankly, you know, on this measure, is higher better or is lower better, right? Because when you're talking about readmissions data, lower is better. So the screen that I'm sharing right now is showing some mother baby statistics. And we're very clear about the cases where we are lower performing than the state and national averages. And our hope is that people will use this when they make their decisions about where to get care, because we think that if we are really an open book about our performance, that we're going to stack up really, really well against any of our competitors. We're not quite where we want to be because we're always challenging ourselves, but we think that we really come across strongly in that way.
So this reminds me of two things. One, just something that people can reference related to what Matt's talking about in terms of how confusing this gets. Haney's, which is the Hospital Association of New York, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with this, Matt, a number of years ago put out a report. They call it a report on report cards. And it documents everything you're talking about. And I was thankful to see, I just looked it up while you were talking, they've refreshed it. So there's actually a November 2019 version of it. So it's up to date. And it will, if you're not sure of what Matt's talking about, if you're not convinced, which I think pretty much anybody listening to the show is already convinced that this is kind of the Wild West of all that, that report really does a good job of documenting it. The other thing that it reminds me of, Matt, is what Progressive did a number of years ago in terms of auto insurance, right? Which was like, hey, we're going to provide, in terms of pricing anyway, I know you're talking about quality right now, but for them it was, we're going to provide quotes, car insurance quotes from us and our competitors. And they were transparent about it. And I think this is a really important point, because if you went on there, you might find that State Farm or somebody else was cheaper. And they were like, hey, that's great. Like, you shouldn't use us if they're cheaper, right? I have just seen so many health systems struggle with that concept of we want to have transparency, but only when it makes us look good, which really isn't transparency. How hard was it for you to convince others in the organization or whoever was behind this initiative that it's okay for us to show areas that we might not be the strongest in?
Yeah, we got lucky that for us, it wasn't that hard. Like I said, our CEO was very committed to this kind of at a bone level, and our board did as well, our board of trustees. And we've been able to use it internally. And let me put this in a little bit of context. When our CEO and I got to the system about 9 years ago now, we came in at a time where, as you said in your introduction, Jackson, which is the largest public hospital system in the country by some measures, and one of the largest academic medical centers, it was bleeding about $80 or $90 million a year. It was functionally insolvent. It continued to exist because it was backed by the full faith and credit of Miami-Dade County. And when I got there had been a huge amount of media scrutiny from some of my old friends at the Herald and the local press about, is Jackson going to survive? Is it going to get sold off? Is it just going to get discarded for parts? And one of the questions I used to get all the time my first year is, how can you get the media to stop telling such terrible stories about us? And I said, oh, that's easy. We can stop doing such terrible things, right? So the way that relates to the quality transparency is it gives us a real motivation to improve in the areas where we're not measuring up, where we're not competitive, because it's very hard for somebody who's in one of those service lines to say, I'm being unfairly judged when I've got third-party data out there comparing us to our competition, and we're hoping that our potential patients are thinking about that when they're making their decision. Now, I'll tell you something that complicates this, and I'm sure that among healthcare marketers, I'm sure there are a bunch on this call, this is one of the pain points that we all share when we go out for drinks after a conference, right? Is that because consumers have so much difficulty understanding all of this complex information on readmissions or door to balloon or whatever, you know, the jargon that we use, what do they rely on? Does the facility look fancy? Is the doctor nice to me? What are the Yelp reviews, right? So we can say, hey, consumer, I don't think you should care about that stuff. But American consumers have a funny way of deciding for themselves what's important. So we need to at least give them another dimension that they can look at.
Yeah, for sure. And I think some of that holds true for pricing too. And I know you wanted to kind of get to what you're doing in terms of pricing transparency.
I do. So this was an idea that I think was getting a lot more discussion probably about 5 years ago than it is today. It's certainly back in the news because we know there are some regulatory issues coming up that are going to push this back to the forefront. But remember, this was a pretty hot part of the discussion around the Affordable Care Act. Right. And there was a lot of really good, I think, journalism going on, again, 4 or 5 years ago, trying to compare prices across hospitals, especially for commodity type services, you know, an X-ray, an MRI, something like that. And we found that there were really only two dominant forces for this happening, at least in our market, and I'm pretty sure this was common across the country. Number one was you could find all kinds of tools that would give you averages. Well, averages don't do us a whole lot of good when we all know that the standard deviation on this pricing is huge, right? So you can have a private hospital across the street from mine that may charge 5 or 10 times as much money. So giving an average when the ranges are so big is not terribly useful to a consumer. And then the other thing that happened in the last couple of years is we were all required to publish our charge masters. Now, if there's anybody on this call who has that kind of a nerdy interest and doesn't already know what it is, you know, a charge master is basically like sticker price on a car, except for the fact that the difference between charge master and what people actually pay is way bigger than the difference between sticker price and what people actually pay. So if you find me somebody who is crazy enough to have paid sticker price for a car, I will find you somebody who has paid charge master price, and it will be just as hard to find either one of them. Neither one is terribly valuable for consumers because it doesn't tell you what you're going to pay. So we built out a tool, I think it's about 5 years ago now, that we built out something called CareQuote. What CareQuote does is lets the consumer search on about 200 different services, maybe it's about 250 now, and tell us the exact insurance that they're going to be using. And I'm screen sharing that now for the people on the video. People can also do it by making a phone call. We find most people do it over the web tool. So you put in all your basic information, but then when you put in your insurance information, we're actually taking all the same information that we would use to pre-qualify somebody for a visit. And what that lets us do is get back with the patient. We commit to doing it within, I think, 3 business days. It's usually the next day. And we say, forget averages, forget sticker price. Here is what you are going to have to pay out of pocket when you show up. And here is how much the hospital is going to bill you for our facility services after the fact. Period. End of sentence. Because when we do that inquiry, we know how much of your deductible you've already consumed this year. We know what your coinsurance percentage is. We know all of those things from doing the inquiry, so we can give you that information. The only way that's going to change really is 2 different ways. One is the calendar rolls over from December to January and your deductible resets, in which case, sorry, that's on you. Or if, you know, if you're covered by Blue Cross and we negotiate a new contract for that service with Blue Cross in between the day you ask for a price and the day you come in for the service, well, in those cases, we'll give you whichever one is lower. So we're doing a price guarantee for 60 to 90 days, something like that. I will tell you, it gets used a lot. It gets used, you know, at least 3 to 5 times a day, sometimes more during busier times of year. We're seeing really good conversions from it. A lot of people who use that service are coming in for appointments. What we've really started picking apart now, just in the last fiscal year, is how many of those are folks who were planning to come to us anyway, and they're using the tool just because they want to figure out what it's going to cost, and how many are truly using it to comparison shop. I have really looked at this as trying to get the technology ahead of the demand. Most of the services on there, because they're outpatient services, any of my friends from hospitals know we're not making a whole lot of money on that, right? All of that stuff is coming downstream. But I want the proof of concept out there. There are a couple of things that are valuable for us on there. We've got maternity services on there. And because we are one of the southeastern United States destination centers for high-risk maternity and for neonatology, me being able to bring in even just an extra 10 or 20 cases over the course of a quarter or a year can have a real impact on our bottom line.
So the key to that is, you know, you did such a good job of setting that up, Matt, but really the idea that pricing in this business, it's even more complicated than the sticker price analogy, because again, that's an inflated, you know, artificial price, but what you pay is what most people care about. So you can always talk about the price of the service. But what's more helpful is to understand, well, what is it really going to cost me in the end? And that is completely dependent on whether or not you have insurance, what insurance you have. And to your point, not just what insurance you have, do you have Aetna or Blue Cross or United, but what is your specific plan? What is your employer's plan? How much have you already paid out of it? I'm telling you, I've been in this business for 20 years. I still get confused. I still get confused by my own insurance. I won't name who it is, but you know, like they have separated out pharmacy from medical in a way that I can't tell like what is going to hit my deductible, how or when. I just have to wait to see. I'm like, because of some stuff that's happened, I've already hit my like out of pocket max for the year in one, but I'm still getting bills in the other. And I'm like, wait a second, what is out of pocket max? I thought I hit it out of pocket max. Well, not if it's this, right? So getting down that level is super important. Let's talk about to what degree COVID has thrown a wrench in all of this, because obviously there has been confusion since the outset on what is covered, whether it's testing, treatments. We had the Trump administration come out early on, first of all, saying any testing would be covered cost-wise. Then they came out and said, we will cover treatment for the uninsured. There's a lot of reports that say that's really been limited. The impact of that's been limited. It's also limited what it covers. We know that there are long haulers, patients that are dealing with, you know, long-term medical, ongoing medical impact of having COVID and what, you know, insurers will cover there. There's a question of pre-existing conditions, which of course is a huge political issue right now. And would COVID be considered a pre-existing condition? All of that comes back down to what the heck am I going to pay if this hits me? Can you talk a little bit about how that's that, you know, and obviously you've dealt with a lot of COVID in terms of Florida and Miami relative to other places in the country. How are you managing in those areas, Matt?
You know, most of what I have heard from that has been anecdotal. I haven't seen yet a really detailed report of how that's been hitting us. I think for us, the biggest challenges ended up being in those ER encounters. Because in fact, I got a text just a couple weeks ago from a friend of mine who said, you know, our kids had COVID. Our doctor said we had to go get tested. This was early enough in the pandemic that you couldn't do it at a remote setting. We had to go to the emergency room. We got tested. Thankfully, both of us were negative. And we got home. And a couple of weeks later, we got a bill for $1,000. And what their insurance company said was, yeah, you didn't have COVID. We cover COVID. You didn't have COVID. So you got to pay for an emergency room visit. Now, you know, I think we gave them the documents they needed to go back, and they did get that zero balanced out. But I think those are the kinds of things that are happening, not because anyone is being greedy, not because anyone is trying to get rich off of COVID, but because this has moved so, so quickly, and the exact complexity that you're talking about in your plan design on the pharmacy versus the medical and all that is because every company, every hospital system, every payer has 17 different technology systems that they have talking to one another. And some of them are held together with, you know, masking tape and chewing gum. And when you try and throw a wrench into it and move at this kind of speed, things break. And a lot of times the good intentions of doing things quickly have led to some real frustrations when you get down to that individual patient level. I think the good news has been, I haven't heard many stories yet, not even just from our own system, but across the country, of people for whom that became either an impediment to getting care that they needed, right, which is priority number one, or where they couldn't get it resolved relatively easily with their insurance companies. You know, I think everybody really is, including some of these for-profit companies, who I'm usually the first one to rail against being a not-for-profit, but even they, I think, have been trying to find a way to get to yes on these things.
Yeah, there's been stories scattered across, you know, media for the duration of this, but it's really hard to tell to what degree they're really representative of something that's happening to many people or whether it's just an individual. There was a story I remember of a couple going in. This actually drove when I had to get a COVID test, it drove how I paid for it, which was I'm just paying for it with my credit card. I don't want to deal with insurance. Because the story was the husband used his insurance and the wife didn't, or vice versa. And the wife paid like $100 and the husband got a bill for like $5,000 because he had a high deductible because it went through insurance and in all kinds of crazy ways. So I think you're right. I think a lot of that is sorting out, but hopefully that is the case. We do have a question that I'm going to throw out to you because I think it's relevant to this. The question is your tool CareQuote compliant with the transparency regulation? In other words, does it show prices for other payers as well?
So no, it does not show prices for other payers. Last time I looked at the regulation, and I confess I have not looked at it since COVID started taking over our lives in Miami, but there were a number of safe harbor provisions in there for people who have existing systems like ours. And I'm pretty sure that with a few tweaks here and there on expanding some of the offerings that we have on it, that we're going to be able to get by with some of those safe harbor exemptions. I will also say, just having been in and around politics for a very long time, I'll be pleasantly surprised if this regulation goes into effect on January 1st. I think the legal and competitive and financial costs of that, especially to the insurance companies, are such that they are not going to go gently into that good night. But we are definitely going to be spending the next 60 days getting ready in case it does.
All right. So one more thing to kind of cover, and then we want to get to something, as they used to say on, I think it was Monty Python, completely different. What are your views on where this is all going, right? Like, we're spending a lot of time at the agency right now. We called it, you know, the name of the show is A No Normal. We believe we're living in a no normal, which means it's going to be quite some time before we see anything looking like normal. And it that makes it hard to kind of know what's coming next. But we are trying to look at some of the consumer behaviors that we're seeing as a result of COVID and trying to figure out how much of these are going to stick. So relative to transparency, whether it's pricing or quality, where do you see this going? Not just as we get through COVID, but maybe on the other side of it. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think the obvious one, and because it's obvious, I won't spend more than a sentence on it. Telemedicine is here to stay. I think everybody I know at every health system, insurance company, technology platform, and everyone else has been saying for 5 years, it's a year away. And there were always regulatory issues, risk issues, legal issues, and reimbursement issues that gave everybody cold feet. Nobody really wanted to be the first mover in any big way. It turned out once there was no way to bring non-emergent patients into your facilities, everybody figured those things out super quickly. And most of it worked mostly like everybody hoped it would. So I think there is going to be a lot still happening in telemedicine. Somebody just commented in the chat that insurance companies may be backtracking on some of that. I'm sure that's going to happen as well. But I think the genie's out of the bottle. So now it's going to be the old tug of war and push and pull on the contracting and on the reimbursement and on what happens at the state legislatures. But I don't think we're going to be able to credibly be able to go back to where we were 9 months ago and say that those problems are insurmountable. Bigger picture on the transparency side, I will argue against my own interests for a minute. There are some really, really smart people, including some researchers over at Vizient, who really think this price transparency stuff is nonsense and a waste of time and energy. And to sum up their argument in kind of just a couple of sentences, they basically argue that almost all patients fall into one of two categories. People who very, very, very rarely use their health insurance, in which case they're probably just going to pay their deductible, right? And they're not going to be that price sensitive. Or people who are at the top of the pyramid who are using a huge amount of healthcare every year. They know they're going to exhaust their deductible every year, so they're also not price sensitive. They don't care whether they exhaust that deductible in March or in July. They know they're going to exhaust it and then everything's going to be covered, so they budget for that and that's what it is. My comeback to that is always, we have seen, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, a movement toward high deductible plans where people may not be able to exhaust it in a year. You know, if your deductible is $3,000, okay. If your deductible is $25,000 or $40,000, that's a whole different kettle of fish. And I think we've seen, again, some years slowly, some years quickly, a move towards co-insurance. So if before you hit that $5,000 or $10,000 deductible, if you're responsible for paying 20% of whatever the pricing is, all of a sudden on some of these more sophisticated procedures, it really does become worth your while to do it. And I think like a lot of these technology things, we'll see it first kind of at the top of the market with people who are very savvy and comfortable with the technology of it, and then it'll trickle down. That's what I really see as the reason I wanted to get ahead of this. Somebody asked about, you know, how can you go back after rolling these things out? And I think that's a really important point that she was talking about, I think, with telemedicine, but I think it's just as true with these transparency measures. And within any given market, you know, it's fun. All of us academic medical centers like to think of ourselves as competing with each other. You know, I love to think that I compete with my friends out at Stanford and, you know, my friends at Penn State and all that. The fact of the matter is 99.99% of my patients, I'm competing with the hospital that's next closest to them, right? So within our market, once one or two of us start making these a big deal out of these tools, you're going to become at a competitive disadvantage for not having. So I don't know how much COVID is going to impact that, except in the way that COVID is going to impact everything, right? So even if 6 months from now, knock on wood, we've all been inoculated, if we still have 5 million new unemployed people, and now their benefits have run out, and now whatever COBRA they've had has run out, and they're just desperate for care, price sensitivity becomes a much bigger deal.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that the great example of that is 2008, the Great Recession. I mean, up to that point, at least in my experience in this industry, you know, elasticity in terms of cost and the impact of the economy on healthcare was kind of non-existent. People would talk about healthcare as being immune from economic downturns. And the Great Recession really changed that. And I think in large part because the way that people were covering their healthcare financially in terms of, you know, increased consumer driven health plans, higher deductibles, that was at a different level. So people were cutting their pills in half. They were skipping routine care because, you know, if it happened 10 years earlier, most of us were in a normal kind of insurance situation where we paid 10 bucks and we had a $500 deductible. Well, boy, in 2009, that was completely different. It was the first time we really saw our industry get smacked because of an economic downturn. And I think that is something that, to your point, we have to watch for here. And again, the more that that's true, the more pricing is sensitive to your point. So,
well, and I think it's something that as healthcare communicators, we also need to get better. We're really good at telling the stories about what we've researched and developed in our systems. We're really good at telling fun patient stories about somebody who beat the odds or who was saved by some incredible doctor. What we're not really good is at telling kind of at the very human level, the impact of these policies. You know, the thing that, again, going back to when the Affordable Care Act was being debated, we spent so much time listening to folks who said, I don't want to have to pay for somebody else's health insurance, to which I would say, you already are. The way that our health system is built, so we are a safety net system, and we go further than a lot of safety nets, which is we do full range of care. I mean, up to your radiation and your surgery and all that kind of stuff, to anyone who has residence in our county. Doesn't matter what your immigration status is, doesn't matter what your employment status is. So we run the full gamut. So if you don't want to pay for Chase's healthcare, right, because you're worried that the, you know, couple of pennies that are going to come out of your paycheck to provide him with basic care is something you don't want to pay, well, then Chase is going to cut his pills in half and Chase is going to, you know, delay his care. Chase is going to end up in the emergency room. Chase is not going to have insurance and therefore is going to get funded out of the supplemental public funding that Jackson gets, which comes out of the taxpayers' pockets. So it's pay me now or pay me later. And it would have cost so much less to insure poor Chase and let him use a full pill and get his preventative care on schedule than it is for us to take care of him when now he needs to have a leg amputated because his diabetes has been completely out of control for 6 months.
Chase, come on,
man. We did a terrible job of telling that story. And Chase suffers for it, man.
Yeah.
My day just got really poor.
Chase is going to walk away bewildered. Now, that's all fair. That's a good point. And actually, it's kind of a, let's use that as a segue, because that was kind of dark and scary. We could go, we could spend a lot of time on that, I think, Matt, and enjoy the conversation. But you did want to bring something forward that is completely unrelated to transparency. And I think Chase and I really sat up when you mentioned it because, you know, we've been doing this show or a version of it since the outset of the of COVID. As everybody knows, 2020, dark times, horrible year. I just this morning thought, like, everybody talks about how bad it's been. And then we think about the election to the end of the year combined with maybe an accelerated wave of COVID because of the flu. Like, we could, the worst could be in front of us. Like, I bleep you not. So let's hope that's not the case. But something that you talked about was kind of a spirit in which you guys approach marketing, at least one of the things you try to bring forward. Why don't you talk about that? And you've got some things to share that I think will at least bring Chase back from his diabetic coma.
Hopefully laughter is the best medicine for Chase.
Right. There you go.
So like I said, I come from a non-traditional background. I've only worked in healthcare for just shy of 10 years now. I am a big believer that communication is about storytelling. And I never learned, you know, I didn't study marketing in school. I had, you know, taken one marketing class in my entire life. I'm totally unqualified for this job, which means I never learned a lot of the things that you're not supposed to do. And I never learned that you're not supposed to be fun or funny or lighthearted or anything like that when you're talking about healthcare. So on our team at Jackson, one of our core values, we always say, is failure. If we're not failing every once in a while, then we're not being ambitious enough. So when we launched a network of urgent care centers about 5 years ago, we decided we wanted to do a really funny video with that. You know, everybody's always trying to make stuff go viral. We're no different. And we made a video that the 20 of us in our department thought was really funny and nobody else did. We were super funny to ourselves. So one of the things that we learned is if we wanted to be funny, we had to outsource funny to people who were funny. I assume that because, again, the people who follow this podcast are super, super smart and engaged, by which I mean they're nerds. They know The Onion, which is America's favorite fake news source. Here in Miami, there is a local version called The Plantain. And we went to the folks over at The Plantain. They had never, it was a very kind of, for fun, informal, a side gig for most of these folks. They had never done any branded content before. And we said, here's what we want to do. We want to work with you guys and create a couple of videos and just have fun with it and see what happens. And they loved the idea. So we said, let's do first a video for our maternity program. And then let's use those same actors and follow them as they become parents to help promote our pediatrics program. So we've released two videos already. The third one is coming next week. I'm going to share the first one with you guys. And then I'll share our social handles because I can shamelessly plug my system. And, you know, hopefully everybody will want to come follow and see what we do. So I'm going to mute myself so that you guys hear the audio really well.
It's here! Hi, welcome. You're going to change into this.
It's here!
Oh. So you're only 1 centimeter dilated. What? It's not here yet.
If I can't eat, you can't eat.
I am creator.
I am creator.
You are creator.
Is that it?
Beautiful nipple work.
It feels like you don't want to come out.
This can't be normal.
I promise it's normal.
So do we just sit here and wait?
Forever?
Well, there is something we could do. This never happened.
Ah! Ow!
It's time to push.
Shut up! Oh no, is that normal?
It's normal.
So good. I laugh every time at like 3 or 4 points of that.
I've watched it dozens of times and I laugh every time that she yells shut up at him. So we released the first one of those was released last year before COVID, which obviously threw things off. We released, and that first one, I think we spent less than $5,000 on production. I think we spent less than $5,000 more boosting it on social. We got hundreds of thousands of plays. We got tens of thousands of plays all the way through, thousands and thousands of shares and engagements. So the second was released about a week ago. I didn't check today, but last time I checked, we were up to about 40 or 50,000 views already. Because we're latching into the plantain's distribution. And then we've got a third one that is teed up to go out in the next week or two. We love the fact that these folks are funnier than we are. We love the fact that it's very Miami. You know, you saw, the nurse didn't hand him a donut. She handed him a croqueta. You know, the second one in the series is about half in Spanish. Don't worry if you don't speak it. It's subtitled. It's just very much of our community, which is how we see our health system. So it's been tons of fun to work on. I'm putting in the chat right now the social handle if you want to follow our pediatrics, which is where this stuff runs, is at Expert Kids Care. That's on Instagram and on Facebook and on Twitter. We share this stuff all there. Our main handle for everything not pediatric is at Jackson Health. So please give us a follow. We try and be fun as well as being informative and inspiring.
Oh, that's great. And it's such a breath of fresh air to be able to have something like that on the show. Right. Chase you're not suffering from diabetic amputation, but we're probably both suffering from a slight level of depression.
But Chase also probably isn't pregnant.
Probably.
Let's hope not.
But we appreciate you bringing that forward. That's fantastic. I think we should just wrap there. Let's just wrap on a high note. Is that fair?
Love it. It's been a blast to be with you guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Have me back anytime.
Definitely. We definitely will. Chase, as always, sir, thank you.
Absolutely. Enjoyed the conversation.
If you have something you'd like us to cover on this show, just let us know. You can post it in the chat channel or shoot us an email at nonormal@thinkrevivehealth.com. Next week, we're joined by Vic Rice, who is Vice President of Consumerism and Insights at UNC Health. And we'll be discussing their activities in terms of performing in order to maintain their focus on being a consumer-centric brand in the midst of COVID-19. Remember, you can find a recording of this show by the end of today at thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID. thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19. Also check us out at iTunes or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And until next week, good luck out there in the no normal. Thanks again for joining us.